It's the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores. Capital Mazda, Stevens Creek Mazda, Concord Mazda, and Team Mazda. Hey, it's Sean Del Gran. And this April, we've got outstanding offers on brand new Mazdas. Plus, we've partnered with One Tree Planted to help reforest areas of Northern California. We pledge to plant one tree for every vehicle we sell. Don't miss the Earth Day celebration at the DGDG Mazda stores in San Jose, Concord, and Vallejo.
Eklund with a shot. He scores! William Eklund caps an astounding comeback. The Sharks win it!
You're listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
Star! Fabian centered on a one-time pass. Splits the defense, has a chance. Deke shoots, score! A spectacular rush from end to end by Mikael Granlund.
Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
Move behind the Sharks' net. It's the veteran, Bo Brodin. Sends back to his partner, Faber. Minute left of the period. Shot by, off the goalpost, score! Guess who shot the puck? Who else? Kirill Kaprizov from 63 feet out. He put it to traffic in front. It bounced in. It rang off the post. Went off of Blackwood. And it went in. 4-2 Minnesota with only 55.6 seconds left.
A difficult year, especially for our fans. And, you know, certainly not the way we want to end our season. You know, what makes this place special in a lot of ways is our fan base and how passionate they are about our team and how they stuck by us through some difficult times, and no more difficult times than this year, obviously. And, you know, we got here 2 years ago and we knew it was going to be a difficult situation, and this was kind of the year we knew was probably going to be the toughest. And, you know, we can't thank them enough for sticking by us. You know, we've got draft capital, we've got prospects, and we've got cap space. So, you know, we certainly anticipate, you know, making a leap next year.
All right. Good morning, everyone. How are we all doing? The final game at the Tank this year has been played, and we are now down to the final two games of the year, which is disheartening to say the least, but the Sharks have now secured the best odds for having the number one overall pick. And I think that that underlines or punctuates what David Quinn was just alluding to there, that this year was going to be the low point. And I think that throughout the entirety of the season, it has been that it's always been about the future. This year was never specifically about this year in the sense that you were never going to find the formula for what it was going to take to win in the future. You were never going to be looking at this as a year where you're really going to be building. This was about the teardown. It started in the offseason with the trade of an Erik Karlsson, and it culminated in the trade of a Tomas Hertl. Obviously, you saw before that, at the end of the year prior, Timo Meier had been traded, and then, you know, we go back to the start of the year before that, the trade of Brent Burns, and, you know, this had been a long time coming for the San Jose Sharks. And, you know, you're going to be good that long. It's going to take away from your ability to build as a franchise. And, you know, the Sharks had to pay for it. And hopefully now what David Quinn was alluding to there with the draft capital, with the cap space, with the prospects, that the Sharks can start to take those steps forward. And that, I don't know how quickly that's going to happen. Obviously, it'll take some time. But I think that when you look to Fabian Zetterlund, when you look at William Eklund, when you look at Mario Ferraro, when you look at a lot of the players that we would talk about as being the core of tomorrow, Thomas Bortolo, and obviously there's many more names we could go down, and I don't want to intentionally leave anyone out, but, you know, it's always been about tomorrow. It's never been about today in the course of the 23-24 season. And yeah, that's difficult because it's not fun, but, you know, last night was an example of what we've seen all year long from the Sharks. They keep pace with the Wild. They go down 1-0, then they tie it back up, Jan Ruda, then they go down 2-1, and then they go down 3-1, but then they're able to fight their way back into it. Mario Ferraro gets his third of the year, makes it a 3-2 game, and then all of a sudden it's goals, you know, about 45 seconds apart to end the second period that put the Sharks at a deficit, and then the Wild add on one more, and it's a 6-2 final, and maybe that feels a little bit more egregious than the game it was itself as it was played out there on the ice. Not that the Sharks were deserving of a win or anything like that. It just didn't feel like a game that was separated by that much. But, you know, you're at a 3-2 game, you know, late in the second period. Then all of a sudden, boom, boom, it's 5-2. And the game just gets away from you. So that's something we've seen entirely too often this year, a game getting away from the Sharks. And also the Sharks giving up goals in bunches. The two that were 47 seconds apart from Kaprizov at the end of the second period really changed the outlook, because, like I said, 3-2 is very different than 5-2, but that's a problem the Sharks have had this year, and it's a problem that's been to a mentality issue, where I think that a lot of those early losses they had in that 0-10 and 11 streak where games got away from them, I think that had a cumulative effect over the course of the season. Not that the Sharks aren't, you know, going out there and giving it their all. I just think there is some, you know, there's some damage that has, you know, a lasting effect, and that I think that that had an impact on the entirety of the year, because we saw the same problems continuing to rear their head. And I don't think there was something specifically that, you know, David Quinn could do to get that out of their DNA. You know, the Sharks, I think, by having that rough start, really had an impact on them. I think it had a lasting impact that allowed them to, you know, maybe slump their shoulders a little bit too easily and maybe have these stretches where they weren't able to re-engage themselves in the game. And obviously, we hope it's something that is not a factor going forward. But at the same time, you know, it's got to be something that they've got to work their way out of. And the best way to work their way out of it is to have more talent on the ice and to have more overall ability and to have more just mental preparedness and more of that belief that they're going to be able to get themselves back in games. Because I think that's part of what it is that they knew it was going to be very hard to get themselves back into games. They knew that they were always going to be challenged. They knew that they were always going to have difficulty reestablishing themselves. And again, that has a lasting effect. It's not immediate. It's not easy. It's not something that they can just ignore when they're in a deficit. It's not like the Sharks of yesteryear where they'd be able to, you know, just put their heads down and then suddenly turn a 2-0 deficit into a 4-2 lead. That's not where the Sharks team is right now. And so again, last night was very much a game we've seen many, many times this year. And I hope it's one that we don't see a whole lot in the future next year. Not that they're going to be an amazing team next year, in my opinion, but I do expect to see strides taken, and I do expect to see them making more steps to be a better team for the future. That said, there were some aspects out of last night's game that I did very much enjoy seeing. Mikael Granlund, he puts up a 2-point game. Mario Ferraro, he's got a 2-point game. Jan Ruda's got a point. William Eklund's got a point. The continued production from William Eklund is something that I very much like to see, and hope that, you know, he ends this season strong, and I believe he has, but I would like to see him scoring points as we go into these final couple of games. Mario Ferraro, obviously, he's wanted his offensive production to go up, and, you know, he had 18 assists this year and got a third goal, and I don't predict that he will be an amazing point scorer in his NHL career, but I do think that if you pair him with more offensively minded defensemen, and I think that if the Sharks have the ability to be a better team 5-on-5, then he will be able to have a greater point total as well. And, you know, Mario Ferraro, obviously a guy who feels like he is a, you know, born leader on the Sharks. We look at his overall ability out there on the ice, and I think it's important to note that this year was a career high in points for him. His previous high was back in the 2020 season. We had 17. This year he had 21, and in a down season for him to be able to be his most productive, I do think that is noteworthy, because it tells you about his mentality, that Mario Ferraro never gave up. He won the Media Good Guy Award, which we'll go over some of the awards that were issued yesterday. But, you know, Mario Ferraro always tried, always fought, always was out there giving it his all on the ice, and I look forward to him continuing that as the Sharks go forward in their future with him, because, again, he wears the A on his sweater so early into his career for no accidental reason. He is a born leader. He gives the Sharks his all out there on the ice, and his continued growth as a player, while maybe it's not as evident on a team that's not as great, I appreciate it. I think that he continues to show exactly why the Sharks have so much trust in him and his future. But to list some of those team awards, Mario Ferraro was voted the Sharks Media Good Guy Award winner by Bay Area Media. The award is presented annually to the player who handles his media responsibilities with cooperation, honesty, and thoughtfulness, and answers the bell no matter the outcome or situation. This is Ferraro's first time winning the award. A quote from Curtis Peschelka, the San Jose chapter chair of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, said that during what's been a challenging season for the Sharks, Mario, regardless of the situation, has always accommodated reporters, giving thoughtful, lucid, and honest answers to some difficult questions. He says Mario's professionalism in this regard, whether after practice or a game, is an example to other players and is appreciated by those who cover the team regularly. Mario treats each member of the media with respect. And Curtis nailed it. That's exactly what Mario Ferraro does. Some of the other awards. Will Smith was named the Sharks 2023-2024 Prospect of the Year, presented by Kaiser Permanente. We look at defenseman Henry Thrun has been voted the Sharks Rookie of the Year. And Mikael Granlund has been voted the Sharks Player of the Year. And obviously in last night's game, Mikael Granlund came through with another two-point effort for him. He has had a phenomenal year, 56 points. And again, we look over the course of his career. This is his best season since 2021. And I think that if he were on overall a better team and maybe had played in more games, we would see a much higher output from him. In the seasons, he had 64 points and 67 points and 69 points. He played about 10 more games than what he will get on the ice this year, 10 or more games, I should say. So, you know, that obviously impacts things. Injury, always a factor. But if you're not excited about the future of Mikael Granlund, then I don't know what to tell you, because, again, I think he's got a lot of game left in him. He is such a hard worker. You appreciate his game. And I think that having him on the Sharks with his overall mentality is going to allow them to continue to grow as a team. Let's get back into some of the highlights in last night's game. It was Minnesota that struck first.
Off the faceoff, save, rebound, score! Matt Boldy, the beneficiary of a faceoff win by Minnesota and the willingness to take that shot right away toward the net. And it bounced off of Blackwood from the left point right to Boldy, and it's in the net, 1-0 Wild.
And so you're staring at a deficit not super early in the game, but early enough, and you never want to be doing that at home. But credit to Jan Ruda, who's been one of my favorite newcomers this year. He was able to get the Sharks right back into it.
William Eklund twists his way behind the goal. Nice little drop pass there in the corner. Got it away from Eriksson Ek, and Granlund went back to the point man. Ferraro, cross ice, Ruda. Back to Ferraro, near side, back to Ruda in the middle. Blast one! Score! What a booming blast by defenseman Jan Ruda. An amazing shot by Ruda, and he makes it 1-1 at 9:32 of the first.
And the Sharks settled things down from here. They were not amazing, but I did think that they did not let the game get away from them. And it wasn't until just over 3 minutes left in the first period that the Wild were able to take a 2-1 lead.
Merrill on the point, goes over to Chisholm. Turns away from a check, creates space, shoots, score! Oh boy, that was quite a wrist shot from the top of the circle. And all Chisholm did was spin counterclockwise, created space and time for himself, and he lets one go up top that beats Mackenzie Blackwood to make it 2-1 Minnesota with 3:09 to play in the first.
And at that point, it kind of did feel like whichever team was going to score the next goal was going to have a lot of momentum going forward. And, you know, unfortunately for San Jose, it was the Wild. But I thought they had played a decent game up to this point. This is why I said earlier, the 6-2 outcome doesn't really feel entirely indicative of the game that we watched, which has been a story for the Sharks a lot of the year, where, you know, the Sharks will play decent, but at the critical moments, they don't come through with the stop. They don't come through with the big moment. They don't take things the other way. They don't bury their shots. And then suddenly it's a 3-1 game after you played a pretty solid second period up to that point with just over 5 minutes remaining.
Here's Kaprizov shooting it as if to accentuate the point in front. Backhand chance, save. Rebound. Score. Right in front of the net, Liam Ogren is going to get his first National Hockey League goal on a play that was generated by a face-off win for Minnesota and a toss by Kaprizov to the goal. It's 3-1 Wild.
And at this point, I wondered how the game was going to turn, but you got to give the Sharks some credit. They came back just about 90 seconds later. Mario Ferraro, he puts one in the back of the net from Eklund and Granny.
And the Sharks, Ferraro will push it ahead and get it out to Granlund. Tips forward, Eklund down the right, walking in, drop pass, Ferraro, shot, score! Mario Ferraro on a nifty drop pass from William Eklund, and the Sharks score their second goal of the game. It's Minnesota 3, the Sharks 2.
So at this point, the Sharks are still within striking distance, and then you have the problem that has reared its head all too many times this year. You have a goal and another goal, 45 or so seconds apart, one of which obviously after you were on the penalty kill, but Kirill Kaprizov, he's a superstar player in this league, comes through with two big goals, which really changed the outlook of the game. First, 19:04 into the second.
Move behind the Sharks' net. It's the veteran, Bo Brodin, sends back to his partner Faber. Minute left in the period. Shot by off the goalpost. Score! Guess who shot the puck? Who else? Kirill Kaprizov from 63 feet out. He put it to traffic in front. It bounced in. It rang off the post, went off of Blackwood, and it went in. 4-2 Minnesota with only 55.6 seconds left.
So he scores the goal, then he draws the high-sticking penalty on Zetterlund, and then he scores another goal.
Sent around the boards here by Eriksson Ek. Boldy stops it. 13 seconds left in the second period. Worked loose. Eriksson Ek. Centering feed. Score! Kirill Kaprizov in front of the net has another goal. 8.3 seconds to go. It's his 44th of the year and second in the final minute of play in the second period. This one's a power play goal, and it's 5-2 Minnesota.
So you just have a minute apart, a game that was 3-2 suddenly turn into a 5-2 game. The Sharks, obviously, any chance of momentum to get back into the game was going to be a much more difficult task for them. This game goes into the third period then at this point, and the Wild did not look back.
It's fed to the slot. Merrill shoots, tip, score! John Merrill tips that puck in the slot. It goes up top. Not sure if it deflected off of something else, but it winds up in the net. It's 6-2 Minnesota. Marcus Johansson was in front. He may have tipped it.
On the night for Mackenzie Blackwood, he obviously was on the hook for 6 goals, but man, there were some unfortunate bounces, some screens. I do not put this one on him, even if it was not his best night, but hopefully he'll be able to put this one behind him and move on. All right, we are going to take a quick break. On the other side, we are going to get into some post-game commentary. I'm going to let you hear a little bit of the interview I did with Curtis Peschelka of Bay Area News Group to get into some commentary he had as well. You're on Morning Tide, presented by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.
That to-do list you have needs one more thing. Chill. It's an easy thing to do. Just crack open an ice-cold Coors Light and chill. Take the afternoon off and binge-watch anything. Go to happy hour and stay for a couple hours. Who's counting anyways? Or hang out with just your dog because you've had enough human interaction this week. Whatever you do, do it with a Coors Light. Mountain Cold Refreshment made to chill. 2020 Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Celebrate responsibly.
Welcome back to Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light.
Sent to center ice. Could be trouble. Henry Front lost control of the puck. He slapped it into his own zone, and Ryan Hartman's going to get to it first. He slides it in front. The quick shot, great save by Mackenzie Blackwood. He dives to his left and stops his man right in front of the net. Marco Rossi can't believe it.
It's hard as a coach to think about that, you know, but it, obviously there's a special player available, and hopefully we get a chance to draft him.
A save from Mackenzie Blackwood and some commentary from David Quinn on the Sharks securing the best odds to have the number one overall pick out of this year's NHL draft lottery. Obviously not a place that David Quinn wants to be, but he does understand the reality. Quinn was also asked about what the Sharks need to do going forward to be better overall on defense.
And we just got to be way more difficult around the net. I mean, we do a lot of puck watching. We don't box out soon enough. You know, we just got to have more aggressiveness. You know, it's got to be mean more to us more consistently. And, you know, we're not big back there, so that can be problematic sometimes. But there's another level for us to get to from a defending standpoint, because at the end of the day, you got to win one-on-one battles. I mean, you know, it's a small area. And if you're getting beat one-on-one as often as we do from time to time, it's just very, very difficult to play defense.
Obviously, it's going to be a while before we see if those changes are made. Let's hear from Nico Sturm, always thoughtful.
With the season that we had, for the fans to show up all of the games, last game of the season when there's nothing to play for in the standings, and they had a ton of fun. As an organization, as players, we owe it to them to get back to having buildings, a capacity, fans like this packing the rink every night, whether it's a Saturday night or Tuesday night, shouldn't matter. And it starts with a product on the ice, and that's what we have to get back to. Because it's so much more fun playing, you know, when the building's rocking like it was tonight than when it's empty. That's why you play the game. There's more emotions that's swapping over from the fans onto the ice. It's up to us to get back to that.
One of the reasons that Drew Remenda calls himself the president of the Nico Sturm fan club is that Sturm always just lays it out. He is not trying to paint a different picture than what we see. He is very much careful. He is thoughtful. He appreciates everything around him, and he understands that he was asked to come in to help this Sharks team become something that they have not been. It takes time, but Nico Sturm plays the right way. He works hard. He is in phenomenal shape. He gives it his all night in, night out, and he treats everyone with the ample amount of respect they deserve. The media, the fans, his teammates. He goes out there and does all of it. He's not a star player in this league, but he's a player who will help you win. And he was asked about spending a little bit more time than usual with the fans after the game.
Yeah, I try to, you know, on the way out, stop whenever I can. I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, they pay my bills. You know, they come to they buy tickets, they buy merchandise. They love the team. They love us as players. And there's going to be a day where not a soul in the world is going to ask for my autograph anymore. So when I can, I try to take the time and pay them back and put a smile on their face.
And if that statement doesn't tell you what type of a guy Nico Sturm is, I don't know how else you're going to figure it out. You know, that idea that one day nobody's going to care, and so he tries to make the most of it while he can right now, acknowledging the fans are the ones paying his bills. And, I mean, again, the guy just gets it. Not to borrow from our old friend Gary Radnich too much, but Nico Sturm simply understands the opportunity that's being afforded to him right now, what the fans mean for him, what he means for the fans. It's a great acknowledgement of the relationship that exists, and of course Nico Sturm gets it. Sturm, back to the game, was asked what happens at the end of the second period.
Yeah, we've talked about it a lot. It's usually cascades, you know, when we give up a goal. We've struggled all year from day one to now to contain the momentum of the game. It doesn't take much in this league, and then you know, two minutes where you're snoozing and the game's gone, yeah.
And again, that's something we've seen all year long, the Sharks giving up goals in short bursts and then suddenly a game getting away from them. I like Sturm's terminology of cascading, but it's something that they're going to have to eliminate from their game as they want to take steps forward as a franchise. It was relayed to Sturm that the Sharks had secured the best odds to get the number one overall pick, but under that light, he was asked what the Sharks need to do to be a better team going forward.
Where to start? I personally can only look at, you know, myself. I'm not the GM. I'm not sitting at the table and putting the roster together. So for me, it's what I can do to get better. So that's what I'm going to focus on this offseason. I think questions of where this roster needs to be improved are, better safe for Quinny or for Grizzly.
A diplomatic answer. He was also asked about how the team can be harder to play against in the coming future.
I mean, a certain part of it is being physical. I mean, if you're 6'4", you have an advantage against a guy that's 5'8". That's just the way it is. But, of course, even if you're like a smaller guy, you're undersized, you may not throw other guys around on the ice or hammer guys into the boards. You got to find a way. Maybe there's a 50-50 puck on the draw. You know, there's stick battles where you can be hard. And the other thing too is mental toughness. I think I've talked about it all year. It's very easy to be in good spirits and feel good in September and October. That's everybody. Every player in the league feels good about themselves in September, October. So what are you going to do when, like, you know, your body starts hurting when you play four games in 6 days and when you're going through a slump? How are you going to respond in February and March? Also, you know, at some point down the road, not right away, but, you know, I want to get back to playoffs. You know, this is the time of the year now where other teams are going to be in playoffs, like where you got to be 100% and not try to find your game. So this is like, how do we, you know, have everybody in the roster from day one in training camp till the very last day of the season without very many ups and downs. And obviously we have a lot of turnover and a lot of young guys coming in on the lineup. And I take as part of my responsibility to teach them to be a NHL player every day, to never take a day for granted, to show up on off days, get a little extra bike ride in, whatever you have to do to, there's always a next game. That's the blessing of being in this league. And like I said, at the end of the day, every single one of us that's going to be here next year, take a long, hard look in the mirror and try not to be in the exact same position when we stand here next year.
A thoughtful, near 2-minute answer from Nico Sturm, who you can tell is obviously bothered by the results, bothered by the outcome of the season and wants to be a part of the solution. So again, big thanks to Nico Sturm all year long coming through and all throughout his tenure with the Sharks. He gives important and thoughtful answers, which I personally appreciate very, very much. All right, I wanted to give you a taste of the interview I did with Curtis Pashelka of Bay Area News Group. If you heard the build-up yesterday, you didn't hear all of it. I wanted to give you this final question I had asked him about some of the roster guys that are on the bubble and maybe what's going through Mike Greer's head as the Sharks head towards another offseason.
Well, I mean, I tend to think that, you know, it kind of has to make, if it makes sense for the Sharks to bring it back, I don't think it would cost that much to bring back Philip Zadina if you want to try to bring him back in another 1 or 2 year deal, you know, because he has sort of gives you a nice option, nice depth option, can go up in the lineup too if you need him. But you know, I mean, he is had a bounce back year of sorts with the opportunity he's got, and you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to him about it, but I think he'd be welcome to open to at least coming back to the Sharks if the Sharks wanted to have him back. So you know, I think that he's a guy that the Sharks might hold on to, and I think the same goes with Costin and sort of, you know, what he brings to the table here. So but it has, you know, if it makes sense from a financial standpoint, and it's kind of a low risk kind of investment to bring those guys back, you know, I think the Sharks would be open to that. But I think I said the same thing about Noah Gregor last year. It's like, oh, you know, right, not much to bring it back, and all of a sudden, you know, he's not qualified, and he goes into the summer as a free agent. So we'll kind of wait and see. I don't think the Sharks going to have to weigh, you know, giving some of these young guys like a Bisted or a Smith or some of these other young players that they're bringing in opportunity to make the big club in camp in the fall with, you know, developing them the right way. And if that means having to spend some time in the American League, and bringing back a Zadina and a Costin to sort of, you know, be, I don't know, placeholders is the right word, but just guys who kind of, you know, will be, you know, guys, you know, what you're going to getting from in the meantime. You know, I think the Sharks would be open to that. I mean, this is still sort of a long-term type project, and the Sharks want to do things the right way with their young guys. And we'll see what they do with those type of players, but I think they'll be open to bringing back some of these RFAs and those type of players, just to, you know, see if they can take their game maybe to another level here next season.
And I also asked him about, you know, the many different paths of a rebuild that it can take, you know, alluding to teams like the Kings, Detroit, the Ducks, Buffalo, and how the Sharks can learn from that.
No, exactly. And you know, you mentioned some of those teams. You know, you throw in at Ottawa, and right, look at Arizona's. Arizona was just here over the weekend, and you look at that roster, you're like, man, they should be better than they are.
Should.
So I don't know. I don't know what the clear answer is. I've always said that when you do tear it down to that, to the studs like that, you know, what do you sort of lean on as your foundation? I mean, what do you kind of, what do you want this team to sort of be? And that's why I was kind of, you know, we mentioned players like Couture and Vlasic and Hurdle to some degree. I think it's important to have those type of guys around, even though individually that they're probably sick of losing, and you know, they you know, want to get out of this sooner rather than later. You know, it's important for a franchise, I think, to have those kind of stalwarts around, and so maybe that's where some of these other teams went wrong, is that they didn't necessarily, you know, have those type of players around. You know, Jack Eichel came into the Sabres and was handled the kingdom. He said, here you go, you know, let's turn this around. And there's a lot more that goes into it. And it just goes to show that, you know, it's not one or two guys isn't going to make a huge difference. You really have to have a team and an identity. And, you know, for some of these other teams, too, it's, if you don't have the goalie, you're not going anywhere either. So that's an important part for any franchise, and especially the Sharks going forward, is to identify who the number one goalie is and then build around that person. And then, you know, try to get more competitive that way. There's a lot of ways to do it. I mean, look at the Kings. Mm-hmm. You know, they missed the playoffs for 3 straight years, but then they're right back in the mix. They added a couple players via free agency and via trade, and some of those draft picks they made earlier in the 2010s sort of matured. So that's You know, that's another way to sort of go about it. If the Sharks, you know, I do think they'll want to spend some money here, maybe not this summer, but the next summer, to sort of get back into a more competitive position. So there's no blueprints for how to do it, and everyone kind of takes their time and kind of try to does it their own way, the way they feel they should do it, and we'll see how the Sharks sort of tackle this problem here over the next little while.
If you want to hear the rest of that interview, check out the Build Up Game 80 versus Minnesota, available from the Sharks Hockey Digest podcast. We are all out of time. I will see you Monday afternoon for the San Jose Sharks. I'm Ted Ramey, signing off.
You've been listening to the San Jose Sharks Morning Tide, brought to you by Coors Light on the Sharks Audio Network.